Welcome back to Raisin Brand, the official Pixel Labs podcast, where we talk about creative and marketing and how the two come together to build brands. Our goal with this podcast is to use our own experiences, along with that of our guests, to give you a little insight into how you can improve your brand or grow your skills in your marketing career. Today I have the opportunity to sit down with Danny, who I've had a lot of interactions with over the last several years of running our business. But I'm excited to sit down today and talk to him about what it means to build a community around entrepreneurship. And so to start things off, can you give a little background behind you, who you are, what you do, and how you got started in the startup community?
Yeah, gladly. So I'm Danny Lothick. I'm executive director for Red Cedar. A lot of people probably haven't heard the name Red Cedar, might have seen some of the stuff we do. But Red Cedar was started about, you know, depending how far back you go, when did it really start? But as an organization, we actually started about just over three years ago. And it was really a group of us who had started a few of our own things, a few nonprofit, for-profit organizations, businesses, startups, all that stuff. And a few of us that came together to say, okay, we've all kind of been doing this, but a lot of us did in our basement. We're just kind of doing it as a side project and we didn't know each other. And we actually realized there was way more people in our community building new businesses and new products and things that we knew about, but not a lot of people were connected. So we kind of just came together and said, okay, what do we actually do then to figure out how do we support startups? How do we find people in the community working on new ideas and connect them? And one of the first things we really did was just go talk to a lot of the people we knew to ask, what are you guys struggling with? You know, where are you getting stuck? Like, what keeps you up at night? And almost every single person, one of the first things they said was just the isolation. And almost every single person we talked to was just sitting alone in their house, or they have a job somewhere, but they do this really cool thing on the side, and this new thing they're making, or this new company they're building, but they don't talk to anybody about it. And you realize you don't learn very fast sitting in your basement.
You don't get that feedback from people.
Yeah. It's just you sitting there with your ideas and you are terrible at giving yourself advice. So we're like, okay, what do we do? And so the group of us were just kind of like, well, it seems like the biggest thing is there's literally not a place for people to show up and get together and talk. So we're like, well, let's start a co-working space. So I said a lot of people might not have seen Red Cedar, the name. One of the first things we as a small collaborative did was started Millrace Co-working. It was a small co-working space downtown Cedar Falls, small unused building down by the river. And the whole thing was, how do we just give entrepreneurs, people building things, you know, makers, creators, builders, a place to just show up and hang out? We started doing Whiskey Fridays and just kind of a chance on Fridays for people that have been building stuff. You know, we never really used the term. We never said, this is for entrepreneurs. Because hardly anyone really calls themselves an entrepreneur. They usually right. think of themselves as, you know, an inventor or
business owner.
Or it's just a person who's passionate about a thing that happens to start a business to do that thing. Right. So that was kind of how we just jumped into it. And then it kind of evolved in the conversations with the cities, with the economic development, with the colleges to say, okay, we're seeing a huge need out there. There's so many people working on things and building things that we just, as a community, don't know about and don't really have a good way to support. We have a lot of resources in this community. You know, you've been through a lot of the university stuff. There's a lot of resources there with that team, the SBDC. Plus, economic development has connections to every business in the area. But there just wasn't really a network between all of it. So everyone's just kind of doing their own thing, but no one's really building off of each other's strengths, learning from each other's experience. And it's kind of like any business, you know, the goal is always, how do you automate what you're doing today so you can focus on the next thing tomorrow? It's kind of that question of, how do we help people starting a new business learn from the fact that someone's already done it and not have to be a brand new thing every single entrepreneur in this community has to learn every single time the hard way? So we started a nonprofit. We kind of brought together some of the cities and colleges and a group of entrepreneurs to just say, okay, how do we for the next couple of years just focus on entrepreneurship, startups, and figure out where there's gaps, where things are missing, and let's just pull some of those resources together and see what we can do for a few years. And so that's what we've been working on the last few years. One of the gaps was access to capital. So we got together a group of local investors and just said, hey, you guys want to pull your money? And as we meet startups who need investment, we'll work with them and bring them to you guys and make an introduction. And I always use the term, the example of Shark Tank. It's not Shark Tank. They're not as big of, you know, assholes. Excuse my language if I'm not allowed to say that. It'll get bleeped out. They're actually nice people who want to help other people build companies in the area. We had some programming that we've done to help train entrepreneurs to learn from other coaches and mentors who have been through it. One of the other things we work on is with economic development, helping them focus some of their work around supporting startups. So we spent the last 3 years doing that. And a lot of the work we're looking to do now is still more on that culture piece, the community. How do we make some of those connections and interactions and support the startup community?
So there's a ton of different things that you're doing that are all kind of part of this cohesive ecosystem of starting businesses in the Cedar Valley.
Yeah.
What role has the community played in building that ecosystem?
Well, and that's been in all of this. The hardest thing is that community is weird. Like, you can't define it. You can't.
It just happens.
You can't create a community. A community just is. And people join it. They come out of it, you know, as they move, as they interact with certain groups. If you think of it like a network, in a lot of network research, you know, there's the core group and then there's like a soft boundary around it. And these are the people that interact regularly. And there's some people that kind of float in and out of that group who are keystones to other groups, who then they kind of bring the connection to this whole group of other people, and kind of the connection we've always had between the makerspace and the tech community, the startup world. You know, there's people that float in between both of them, but those communities don't interact a lot naturally.
Right.
So we kind of always said, you know, we're not creating a startup community. The startup community just is here. The question is just how much does it interact? And so honestly, most of the value that's come out of our work the last couple of years hasn't been from us coaching someone or being the person to like take credit and like, yep, we helped them be successful. It was usually we just helped create the environment and make an introduction or start a conversation that led to two people working with one another on something. Or one of the events we held, and sometimes people have given me crap because we're like, a lot of times it seems like you just get people together for beer and hang out. I'm like, well, yes, kind of. But I use the term a lot, engineering serendipity. It's so hard to ever know, you know, this stuff is too complex to know who should talk to who at what time. It's almost more just how can you make it more likely that the right conversions and interactions happen at the right time? And that's usually through networking opportunities, socials, you know, the informal chances for people to connect and just have conversations about interesting things they're doing. And then those relationships last. You know, we might have been the people to hold that event and those people come to it, but we don't own those connections that happen. Those connections are now strengthened, and we don't have to hold another event, hopefully, for those people to get together and interact.
Well, and the goal from that, too, is that they see the value in those interactions that they've gained in those relationships, and then they tell the next person about this ecosystem, right?
Yep. Because one of the first things we did was, we realized we can't just hold our own events and expect people to come to us. Before we ever did any events, it was just let's go talk to everybody that's doing stuff and show up at their things and just see what people are doing and what conversations that people are having. Because so often you don't need to create a new event. You just need to go to someone else's event and be like, hey, have you gone to this event? And then say like, hey, have you interacted with this person?
Yep. So what I'm hearing you say is you can't fabricate a community, but you can create the events that people can attend to build that community organically.
And the way you said that, you can't fabricate a community, is perfect. Because you can't, I feel like if you come into it saying we're going to create a startup community, you almost set yourself up for failure right there. Because as soon as you start seeing it as your thing to create, now you're not actually creating a community. You're just
creating the community.
You're just creating your own personal network.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the biggest things.
It becomes a self-serving thing if you're creating and building a community rather than facilitating it.
Yeah, especially in the Midwest. Like, if you only do a thing and show up at the thing because you need something from it, people are really quick to say, like, oh, I see why you're here.
Right.
And they just ignore you.
Right.
And so much of it just has to be, just be a part of the community and show up and ask, what value can I add to these interactions?
What role do these networking events play in building this community? Like, what are some of the interactions that you've seen happen that kind of verify that this is the way that these communities are built?
Yeah. So COVID, I think, is a really good illustrator. It helped illuminate why these events are so important, the social piece of it, because we haven't had a lot of it in the last year. And, you know, as we've been doing more Zoom meetings, I've realized it's actually incredibly efficient. I love Zoom because there's so many meetings I'm just able to jump on and get something done, that before it's like, okay, we'll wait a week until we have an excuse to get together and talk about this. But the thing I always say is you don't build trust in a Zoom meeting. And there's an old saying that business moves at the speed of trust. And that is absolutely true, especially in early stage startup communities. Those types of interactions are almost always based on trust. And if you don't trust somebody, that's when you start saying like, well, before I talk to you, we need to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I might need to have my lawyer review it. Like there's a lot of research that looked 50 years back at Boston, Massachusetts versus Silicon Valley, back when they were about the same economically speaking, and why did Silicon Valley become the tech hub as it is and Boston didn't. And they found it wasn't because of a great accelerator program. It wasn't because of some awesome government city incentive program. It was because the culture in Silicon Valley was, oh, you're working on something? Let's grab coffee. Let's talk about it. That's awesome. Let me connect you with this person doing this thing. There was such a level of trust that just knew if you gave to the community, if you made introductions, if you made connections for people, you would get that back tenfold from the community. And so that whole trust piece, you can't build trust without socializing. Right. Like if it's all formal meetings and business conversations, you don't build trust in those meetings because you know everyone is there for a reason.
Everyone has an agenda.
Exactly. So the social pieces, I think, are the most critical piece because that's where people build trust. And then that's what opens the doors to people actually collaborating and to just texting the person that they've, you know, had a drink with twice or coffee with, saying, hey, have this idea. Can I run it by you quick?
Well, and just that idea of referring people to other people without any expectation of anything in return.
Yeah.
Like when you can build a hub of people that are willing to do that and not try to turn it into a referral program of any sort, that's when you start to see a lot of really valuable connections happen because it's no longer financially driven. It's all driven by the greater good.
Yep. And you see a lot of these digital platforms for creating like referral networks and things. And every single one of them I've ever seen never genuinely takes off other than maybe within, you know, the financial sector, financial advisors, insurance advisors, those types of things, because it's a very self-serving thing. Like it's a, it's you're giving with the expectation of receiving versus so much of the value in the startup community, the places you see doing really well and people making interactions, creating new products, leveraging other people's experience. It's usually very experienced people who have been through it that found success who then jump back into the community and just start showing up again and saying, how can I help? How can I make connections for the next group of people working on things?
A referral program turns into, I'm going to connect you with this person because it's going to make me more money, not because you're the right connection.
Yep. And I think the people that have been really successful can look back and they know if I help this person, they're going to go out, do awesome things, and they're going to build their whole network into all these other people that someday I'll be able to leverage their experience and their knowledge there to ask questions of them. So there's a, like, I'm giving back not because I expect anything in return, but I know in the global scheme of things, it'll come back.
Absolutely. So you, at the very beginning, did already a really thorough job of like explaining what Red Cedar is. Can you talk a little bit about the new initiative that you have going on with Launch Cedar Valley and what that is and what the purpose is behind it?
Yeah. So
it sounds like that's something that revolves around a community, right?
Yeah. And so this was something that goes back almost 4 years ago. And one of the things was we said, you know, the startup community, one of the things we were looking at is how do we be a beacon? You know, we used to use the term a lot, front door. How do we be the front door? But that kind of implies people have to come to you. They have to walk into your thing. Versus we started to talk about, okay, how do we just be a beacon to spotlight everything happening in the community to raise awareness of, you know, who's doing something really cool? You know, there's so much of this that is the whole, what's the term? When you put something out in the universe,
Manifestation.
Manifestation. And there's another term for it. The law of, I'm going to miss it. Law of attraction.
Okay.
There we go.
Yep.
So we realized so much of it is just a lot of startups. One of the best, most valuable things for them is just community awareness. Because if no one knows about them, no one could say to themselves, oh, this person could really maybe value if I made this connection for them. So much of what launched Cedar Valley is was, okay, how do we create a beacon to help spotlight everything happening? Which can look simple. It's stories. It's writing articles. We're working on a podcast for it. But so much of it's designed around how do we illuminate what's happening so that people in this community who have connections, who have resources, who want to champion it, can see what's happening, can see the engagement. And because I think a lot of times we have this perception of, you know, if we don't see it, it's not there. There's so much happening in this community that people don't realize. And so many connections that people don't realize exist in this community. You know, everyone thinks, oh, we're in the Midwest. We live in Iowa. Like, we don't have connections to other places.
Right.
But I would use Chris Hansen as an example, the CEO of Western Home Communities. They're one of the most invested companies, organizations nationally in technology within the aging services industry. They're part of a big national fund that invests in new technologies in that industry. So if you were someone working on an aging services technology or product, one of the best people to connect with in the country is here. But you would never think about that as a person to go to. So much of what we're doing with Launch is meant to be, okay, how do we tell the stories? How do we show people what's happening? One, to create that engineered serendipity to just spotlight things so that it's more likely someone will be like, I should go talk to them or I should reach out. But then also, how do we drive certain conversations forward? Because so much of what happens in startups and technology is always needing to look at, okay, what's coming out now? You know, if you're watching tech stuff right now, you see the whole thing around NFTs, you know, non-fungible tokens.
Right.
And I just saw the other day that somebody bought a Banksy painting for $85,000, burned it, and created a digital version of it backed by an NFT, which is like a blockchain-backed proof that this is the original copy. But it's a digital asset. So it's just a digital picture, just like any picture, but it has this backing on it that you can prove I own this original. And they sold it for $385,000 worth of Ethereum. So they sold it for a cryptocurrency. But now there's sports players who are auctioning off like video clips from their games
as
NFTs. Jack Dorsey, Twitter.
Yep.
He's auctioning off his original tweet. Like, it just opens up this whole new world of now you can sell digital assets as limited edition, like provable originals. Right. And for artists, this opens up a whole new world of now you can actually sell digital artwork as an original, which used to not be a thing. You used to have to sell the actual physical canvas and then just digital reprints.
Right.
So how do we drive conversations around some of these newest things happening so that people can jump on them, be like, oh, and have conversations about them. Again, to kind of drive just that serendipity around people engaging with that. And I don't think people realize a lot of just the actual technology development happening here from anything from like video game development, interactive entertainment with SciPlay. A lot of people don't know we have a publicly traded video game development company in Cedar Falls in the technology park. I just IPO'd last year for 300 some million. Don't quote me on that. But plus we have some other video game development companies in the area that have spun off from that. So it's how do we start having conversations and showing this stuff so that people realize like, oh, this is stuff we can do here. Like there are people building these types of things here. So that's really what we're working with Launch is that. But then also for someone who has an idea, how do we help give them enough wayfinding to know who can they go connect with? Who can they go to? Without being a gatekeeper. We don't want people just emailing Danny and saying, hey, how can you help me? It's like we want people to be able to just know who's out there, who they connect to. And so some of the events
make those connections on their own and not have.
Yep.
So that kind of brings up the point of people that are just starting into business and are maybe a little bit intimidated by the community that already exists and on getting into it. Is this going to create a more welcoming, more open space for them to start getting involved in these community events?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we're trying to be very intentional about is how do we invite people into the community? Because you don't need to be invited. That's the cool thing about a community is you don't have to ask for permission to join it. Everyone's part of it if they want to be a part of it. And what the community is changes with every new addition or every person that comes and goes. You know, as ethereal as that is, you don't really leave or join a community. you're just either active in it or you're not.
Right.
But there is that sense of, I think, especially once a community starts to become more recognized, you know, a lot of people around here, I don't even know if I would still say that we have a like startup community. I know there's definitely a community of people who fit that, but most people wouldn't look at it and be like, oh yeah, there's a startup community, or I am or I'm not part of the startup community.
It's a networking community that just happens to have a significant amount of people that have started businesses or want to start businesses.
But as you start to get a more recognizable community, it does become more intimidating to join it. Because now you're like, okay, well, there's all these other people that have relationships and that have connections, and I'm walking in the middle of their connections and interrupting their conversations to just interject mine that I don't know what I'm talking about.
What advice would you give those people? Like, not just jump in and do it, but like, are there ways of like maybe reaching out to specific people that you know are part of that network and just try to introduce yourself to that one person? So you have like a wingman pretty much, like that idea of like that way you're not showing up to the, like, are there ways for entrepreneurs or soon to be entrepreneurs to get connected with these events in a way that feels a little bit more comfortable for them?
Yeah. I would say one, that's part of me, the responsibility to me, the responsibility of people in like already a part of the community or more active within it, is to make sure you're always reaching out, inviting other people in. If there's value in the network, it's always valuable to invite other people in so that they know, like, yes, like, come talk. Because I would say, you know, I think a lot of people have this hesitation thinking, oh, I don't have anything to add to this. I don't know what NFTs are. I don't keep up with that stuff. But the thing I think I've seen more times over again is that every single person has a unique set of connections, networks that they're a part of that aren't already in this group. And I've never seen somebody come to a conversation without something unique to add to it, because every single person, through their job, through their family, through their friends, has some connection that I can guarantee you is valuable to somebody else in that room. It's hard as heck to know which connection that is, but that's the value of just joining the conversation, is just trying to see like, oh, just listen, just learn. And something will probably come up of like, hey, I actually have a cousin that works over at this place, and like I'd be glad to make an introduction. And the other thing,
through having those conversations, you learn those things. You learn what people need and what you have to offer, or connections you have to offer.
Yep. And I think if you come into the conversations just to listen, I think so much we have a feeling like we have to contribute right away, or like we have to interject something in, and so much of it's just show up.
Yep.
I think that's why we've always designed a lot of events that we do to have no agenda or anything. Because I think once you have an agenda, it becomes like, oh, well, I don't know if I can go to that. Like, there's an agenda. I don't know if I'm invited. Versus just literally, I don't even know if I'd call it a social. It's just literally people, a group of people gathering to hang out. It's so like Tech Brew.
Yep. That's what I was just thinking of, is like Tech Brew is, I don't go often, but when I do, there's always like three or four different distinct groups of people around in this one collective space. And there's a good chance I'm going to find someone that I know there in some way.
Yep.
And they may be hanging out with people I don't know, or in a group of like a topic of conversation that I don't know anything about. But because I know them, I'm going to go and just be part of that little cluster and just listen.
Yep.
And there's things that you can learn in the people that you get connected with when you do that is invaluable.
And so many, because when we were doing that event, we got to a point where we asked, should we do more programming? Like, should we make each Tech Brew about a topic or something? And so we talked to some of the people that I always attend, and most of them said, honestly, the reason we show up is it's like a standing meeting time, knowing we'll get to hang out and see some of the people that we're usually just too busy to hang out and see the rest of the time. And so we realized, like, no, don't do any programming. Like, it's just, the value of it is that it's just open time for conversations to happen. Like, even just when I get up and just give a quick thank you, I still feel bad doing that because it throws off the whole, you can tell a noticeable change after that.
Right.
From before that.
When the murmuring and talking is up here, and then you come in and talk and it's like up here, and then all of a sudden it drops.
Yep.
And then it's like a little bit quieter the rest of the time because there's like a groove and a just an energy. yeah. that you interrupted.
Yeah.
So.
And then at that point, it's like, oh, well, I guess the event's kind of on its,
it runs
way.
Itself.
Yeah. And so I would say there are a lot of people who want to join in, even the term of thinking of yourself as an entrepreneur, like, are you one? Are you thinking of being one? To me, one big difference I would make is, to me, there's a difference between an entrepreneur and a business owner. And I know this might be a different question, but we can...
No, as you were saying that, I had a thought, but explain what you're saying.
So I've gone to talk to a lot of high school students about entrepreneurship and all this, and it is never the business students who come up afterwards excited to talk. It is always the science students and the art students. And so to me, what I found is, the people that are usually typically actually represent what an entrepreneur is are just the people who are incredibly passionate about a thing, and they're just so driven to solve that problem or to move that thing forward that they usually end up starting something.
Right.
But most of them don't go into it saying, I want to be a business owner. Nobody right. wants to do accounting and bookkeeping and hiring and all this stuff. So a lot of times what I tell the students is, like, if you want to start something, make sure it's something you're so passionate about that you're willing to put up with the 80% of the crap that you just have to do so that you can do the 20% of the stuff you're genuinely passionate about. But I think that's the thing, is a lot of people, me included, when you think about, like, entrepreneurship, it's put on such a pedestal. It's so scary to go to an entrepreneurship quote unquote event, because you're like, oh, these are business owners and, you know, industry people. And it's like, it's usually just a group of nerdy people that are really passionate about stuff that just like to talk. And
right.
And so I would say that people, like, entrepreneurship is not, we treat it like business. It's more like a sport. Like,
right.
It's
so, I think maybe possibly a simplified version of what you're saying is, like, there are people that are passionate about a thing, and there are people that are passionate about business. A lot of times those artists, the scientists, those people that have a problem to solve, they actually don't know anything about business and what goes into a business of solving that problem. And they need to get connected with the business-oriented mind so that they can do the thing they're passionate about and let someone else take care of the business part of
yep.
it. And sometimes I think startups, the best startups can be that connection between those two types of people.
And that's one thing that I would say, again, the people thinking about jumping in or they're interested in the idea, is that, so seed funding, for example, we run a seed fund and investing companies, and a lot of the other venture funds we talk to specifically said they will never invest in single founder companies because they found one person usually does not have the skill sets necessary to run a business and a startup. You usually need the co-founders. You know, everyone goes to Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. You usually need the techie, the passionate person, the creative person, plus the business person.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of people think, like, well, I'm not a business person. I can't go to an entrepreneur event. And I would actually say that's one of the most, like, you need both pieces.
Yep.
You need people that are really excited about, you know, profitability models, revenue models, and doing that stuff. And how do we tap into new markets? But then you need the people that just genuinely have interest and passion for a topic, who see problems in the community for certain groups of people and say, how do we solve this? And they're the ones that usually say, like, this thing is a problem.
Yep.
And then a lot of times you end up talking to someone and somebody's like, you know, that's probably something that we could do something with. Yeah. And so those conversations and that open conversation dialogue, you usually need that to happen between people for things to spur, oh, there's an opportunity there.
Right. Well, for me, like, I was a creative. And I say was because I don't do as much of it anymore.
Yeah.
I still can, but I was a creative that had a problem. I wanted to create the space to create high-end video production without limitations of corporate, right? And I knew nothing about business, but I happened to know someone that knew something about business and got me connected with the BCS. Through the BCS, I got connected with people like you and Millrace. And I'm now connected with a network of people that if I have any business question, like reaching out to Trace, like I can reach out to just about anyone and get connected with someone that can help me solve a problem that I have within my business now. Even though it's a single owner thing, I had this network of people that allow me to have a resource around me all the time.
Yep. And you can tell if you had to approach all of those interactions as formal interactions, one, you'd probably have to pay a ton of money mm-hmm. to get those people's time. And then two, you would not be a priority on most of those people's right. plate. So the fact that there's a community of people that know the give and receive yep. piece of it is just naturally there. You can tap into yep. all that collective knowledge that otherwise it'd be, okay, I need the budget $5,000 to try and pay a consultant on business advising. Right.
I mean, I love 1 Million Cups and I would do it no matter what it came, what came from it. But the connections that I've made from just being there, I have an assumption that my willingness to give to that event has created some good karma and some and brownie points amongst other people in the community for them to help me out if I have a quick question.
Yep.
Like that type of community that you're building is what creates a valuable resource around you.
Yeah. And you realize how much it becomes the value of the network is it leverages one piece of input to create 10 units of output.
Yep.
And that's where the value comes from. You know, we look at the programming piece of Red Cedar is an organization, you know, a nonprofit that does some programming. Typically the type of programming that is a coaching program or something like that is a transactional approach. It's you put $1 in of coaching, you get $1 out of, you know, working with the business and helping support them. But so much of the stuff that genuinely accelerates these things is when you get that network effect of, okay, now this person that has gained this knowledge is plugging that back into the community. And now, you know, Christian Gray with what he's doing with Access U and Friendship America, he's now got this whole network within the federal government level with the apprenticeships within the businesses that if anyone here ever has something in that area, he can go to them. Or, you know, you look at other recognizable startups in the area, you know, with Far Reach, with SpinuTech, with, you know, Wade Arnold, with what he's working on now with Move in the fintech world. You know, you've got these things that these people have built these networks and they're from here and have a connection here. So people from here are more likely to have access to that network. So that's what really builds on itself. And I think is it seems soft because it kind of is. You're talking about right. networks and connections right. and relationships. But that's the stuff that actually drives a lot of the, you know, engine behind new things getting started.
Yep. Now, you touched a little bit on some of the successes that have came out of the whole ecosystem in the Cedar Valley. How have some of those more established businesses given back to that community?
And I think the biggest way that...
continuation, how can they?
Yeah, yep. And the thing that I've always seen is the most valuable is when you go, you find a lot of success, you make these whole new connections, these resources. Just bringing those connections and resources back to the community and making sure you're available for other people to be able to tap into those. Not saying you have to have open office hours and spend your half your day meeting with people like, oh, I want to start something. But by just being in the conversations and as you're talking to someone like, oh, I really like what you're working on, let me make this connection to this person. Or, hey, I've been in that position before. Here's what I did. You know, not telling people like, here's what you should do. Just saying, right. here was my experience.
Exactly.
And so much of the value, especially not just entrepreneurs who are successful, but just established businesses and why they're valuable in those conversations. Because I think a lot of times there's this weird divide between the startup community, not the community itself, but the conversations about startups and the conversations about big corporations and entrepreneurship versus entrepreneurship. And I think the more you're around it, you realize there's really no divide. It's all people seeing problems and trying to solve them. Sometimes those problems, they solve it in an organization and the organization reaps the benefits of it, you know, and they get paid to do it. Sometimes somebody starts it in an organization and it spins off and they create a new startup. So I think there's a lot more interplay between the two than a lot of people realize, which is actually like why I think when you say startup community, without thinking of the existing industry and big companies as a piece of that is wrong. They're one the same, but because oftentimes for a lot of startups who really get success and traction and grow, usually their first customers are the big companies. You know, if you got a new product that's, you know, dealing with like one company we're working with, Squad Ready, it's dealing with a virtual team building environment and game, but designed around actual strength training, team building, your customers are those big companies. you know, the other startup next door is not going to be able to pay you to come and do team training for themselves and their one other founder. But VGM is going to have multiple teams who could benefit from that technology, who are then your key customers that you need to go to. So sometimes just being the first customer for a startup, knowing they're still beta testing what the product is, they're still learning, or even before it's ready to be a customer, even if they just come to you and just saying, hey, love the idea you're working on, kind of give you some feedback.
Yeah.
Just being there to offer like, hey, here's what you're kind of working on. Like, I don't know if we would use that piece of it, but here's something I know we would really like to see in this. And if you could do that, let's have another conversation. And then maybe that'd be something we're interested in. Just being open to those conversations and giving feedback and showing up to just see what people are working on is one of the most valuable things large companies can do. And beyond that, I think the other big thing is, I think a lot of people have this perception that entrepreneurs and startups are the 20-some-year-old college graduates coming out with great tech ideas, which I know we're both close to that. And we're sitting here talking about how it's not that. I know, there's irony and everything. But the average age of a founder, and this is nationally researched, is 42 years old. 45 years old for high-growth founders. So usually startups on average are not the college students graduating out with big ideas. Those are the sensationalized ones. And especially in the era of the early internet age and social media coming up, that's where a lot of those ideas spun from, because the first people that thought about social networks, so they use the Facebook example, was a college student that was exposed to all these other college campuses trying to create social networks. Yep. So it was just by nature of the fact that they happened to be in that area and exposed to it. But you see the same thing with technology and entrepreneurship, and why this usually most of the ideas come from somebody who's worked in a business in an industry for the last 20 years. They understand the industry, they understand the needs in that industry and the problems, and they're like, hey, this one thing has always been a problem. I could start something up, or like, I actually built something at our company to do that. Maybe I could do that for a bunch of other companies.
Right.
So what you see is people that go out, they get knowledge and experience, they probably made some money, they have some savings, and then they're like, okay, I'm at a point where I think I could make a run at doing something with that.
In a lot of ways, I think the reason why they end up being the more successful ones is because they had that experience.
Yeah.
They didn't just skip the life experience and go into starting a business because they had an idea. They went in and they learned more about the industry that they wanted to work in or start a business in first.
Yep.
And then they went and did it.
And again, the whole thing about you always have value to bring to a conversation.
Yep.
There's so many people that have some of the skills to start something, but just don't have the industry depth of knowledge to know what needs to be solved. So a lot of times it takes somebody coming to a thing and being like, oh yeah, I've actually worked at X company for the last 27 years. We have that same problem. I fixed it with this thing. And then that spurs a conversation of, could we actually maybe make that as a separate product? So there's always this really valuable interaction that happens where you're trying to pull people in who are in the industry, who have knowledge. And this is where it gets really blurred between, you know, if you just have a room full of people that want to start something but aren't actually out working in companies, then those people aren't going to start anything. They don't have the knowledge. So much of even the startup community isn't just startup people. It needs to be techies and engineers and scientists and people that are just passionate about stuff. Marketing people, like every single skill set is needed in that.
Because
you never know where an idea is going to pop out of.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that just because you have an idea for a business doesn't mean you can do everything within that business. So many people forget about the marketing part. Like,
yeah,
you could have the best product and the best idea in the world, but if no one hears about it because you didn't market it, then it falls flat.
That's something we struggle with in the Midwest, especially, is we have a problem solving mindset. Like, we love solving people's problems to a fault. Like, we don't like being recognized for solving people's problems. It is we see it as selfish to even ask for money. Like, how dare I ask them to pay me for just having saved them $1,000.
Right.
But at the same time, like, that's what a business is you can only give out of the goodness of your heart for so long before you need to find a way to do it sustainably.
Yep.
So even when we have conversations about nonprofits versus for-profits in the entrepreneurship world, they both have to solve a problem, and they both have to find a way to capture value in return to continue solving that problem sustainably. Yep. The difference is usually for a for-profit, like the person you're solving the problem for is the person paying you. So, you know, for you guys, like X person needs some video production done. That person pays you to come do video production. In the nonprofit world, it's usually the person that you're serving and providing value to can't pay you, but there's this whole other group of people that really support that person, and they pay you to go help that person.
Yep.
So you're still having to solve a problem for someone and find a way to capture value, but the person you're bringing value from isn't the person you're helping, it's the people who care about the person you're helping.
Yep.
So there's still, in all of this, it's all the same concepts of you're solving a problem for somebody and finding the way to do it sustainably. And then how do you build on that and grow on that? And it's as simple as that seems, it's obviously incredibly difficult.
Right.
But that is so much of the, going back to your question about how corporations and companies give back, so much of it is just that most of the opportunities to create value is in businesses. And most of those opportunities need access to talk to people at those businesses to figure out, hey, is this what you need? Is this not what you need? But also then a lot of the knowledge that's going to know, hey, this problem needs to be solved, are people working there. And, you know, most, no company would I ever recommend, you say, go tell all of your employees to go and spin off companies.
Right, because then the whole company falls apart.
Exactly. Right? But at the same time, just don't stop people. Don't actively try to prevent people from building on it. Because this is another thing about Silicon Valley, is they, early on, if you read some of the research on it, there was this one case example of a chip development company, where Silicon Valley concept came from, who had a group of people spin off to try and start a new one. And they tried to enforce some very strong anti-competition things against them. But with the way that I can't remember all the details specifically, but it didn't go through. Like, they were able to continue doing it. And that kind of set the tone of, hey, let people compete. And then the fact that they let this other company go and it became successful and it competed with them.
Yep.
But that competition grew their networks exponentially to the point where both companies became more successful. Yep. Because now all these suppliers started popping up around. Yep. That one company alone could not justify that whole supply network. But now that there's multiple. So by allowing people to continue creating things and doing things, and you don't...
In supporting it.
Yeah.
Not just allowing, but actually supporting
it. Yep. And you would never want to actively, like, you're not going to invest in your competitor's company.
Right.
But by talking to them and learning from them in the whole co-opetition thing, yep. Like, knowing there's always going to be competition for scarce workforce, you know, software developers are in really high demand around here, and there's always this back and forth. And we talked a lot with some of the tech companies in the area of, you know, there's a sense of shared, like, we know... We're each going to pull each other's employees from time to time just based on who's more interested in which projects, which company culture. But it's a understanding like, hey, I'm not actively going to poach from you. But if it happens, it happens.
But well, and I think about it, and I want to start wrapping it up. But the last little point that I want to make in regards to that is when you have competition, it improves the quality of your work, because you're either going to improve to compete or you're going to die. And then the other part of it is too, is I've always believed in the rule of abundance. Like, there is so many places that you can get business from if you are good.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to run out of business if you know what you're doing.
Yep.
Your competitors can't take you out of business simply by being in existence.
Yeah. And that mindset of abundance is huge. Because if it's always a mindset of someone else gaining opportunity takes away from my ability to gain opportunity, that will kill a startup community faster than anything else.
Yep, it's toxic.
It is. And so much, going back to launch, what we're doing with that too, is there's a lot of these very recognizable traits that you see in successful startup communities. And they're not, again, programs and things like that. It's just the embodiment of certain traits and how we interact, how we relate to each other, that we really want to make sure are embodied in the stories we tell and the things we share. Because that culture, the cultural piece of it, is huge to how people interact you know, there's all this research behind rainforests and how they grow versus how farms are created. And so much of it is the dynamism of an organic level of interaction with people benefiting from each other, cross-pollinating ideas, sharing resources. So a lot of it is, how do we build that? But again, you can't fabricate community. It's just the community that's there. You need to build
the experiences for them.
Yep. It's just, what role can we play in helping foster and support that community?
Well, that's a great segue into the last part, and that is, as if I am a small business or a someone looking at starting a small business or any sort of venture, what are some of the resources I could lean on in the Cedar Valley that I'm going to gain the most from? Where should I reach out to? Who, like, what should I do if I want to get involved in this community?
Yeah. And part of it depends on what type of business you're doing and that type of thing. But in terms of getting involved in the community, just, I mean, if you go to launchcedarvalley.com, we're working on finishing up the site now. We've already got kind of a list of the resources available up there, all the events, accelerators, incubators, resource providers. So again, launchcedarvalley.com, it's got a list on there of all those resources. We're working on getting a new community calendar up that shows all the upcoming events for everyone, for all the different types of startup related events and activities and resources. But I would say one is, don't be afraid to show up. Don't be afraid to go talk to somebody, you know, and just ask if you know someone who runs a business, hey, what should I plug into? The Chamber of Commerce is a great place, especially if a lot of your customers are local, to plug in and to show up and to talk to people.
And locally around here, that's Gros Cedar Valley.
Yep, in Gros Cedar Valley, yep, here locally. Go to 1 Million Cups. Just show up to it. Because I would say a lot of times the presenters and their type of business might not be relevant to you, but I can guarantee you, just by nature of knowing who's kind of involved with 1 Million Cups and who regularly shows up, every connection you need is in that room. So don't be afraid to talk to people and someone you've never met before, just introduce yourself. That conversation might not have value, but you've made an introduction, you've met somebody, and then keep talking to people. In terms of resources, if anyone wants to reach out to me directly, on the Launch Cedar Valley website, we actually have a big button that says Get Started, and it's just a contact form to go straight to me to just have a quick 30-minute, hey, let's sit down. Right now it's virtual, but usually right. Just be like, hey, let's grab coffee.
Perfect.
Just love to talk about what you're working on, see if we know any good connections, if there's a program where we can refer you to, that'd be really valuable, but really just kind of helping people wayfind. And otherwise, SBDC, if you're a small business looking to get started, especially kind of looking at how do you get set up, what you'd be worried about from a bookkeeping, accounting standpoint, legal status, your business model. Amy Dutton over there is amazing. A lot of the resources over at UNI, just off
where we started our company.
Yep.
So.
And I would just say, don't be afraid to just talk to people. I mean, the more you interact, engage with people, but be intentional about it. You need to kind of know why you're there.
Right.
But it might just be to meet people.
Yeah.
But come into it before you need something. Because again, like I said earlier, if you show up,
the more you can give into it before you need something.
So just come to participate.
Yep.
Because if you just show up because you need something from someone, it changes the way you interact with people, and it's really obvious.
Yep.
So just get involved and show up.
You know, I've known you for a few years now, and I've had a lot of conversations with you, and I still learn things today. So I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk about this. This is all stuff that's very close to me. I love giving back to this space, and I'm glad that I was able to have you on the podcast today.
And you guys have been, if anyone's been around this community, they know how much you guys have put into this. So thanks for helping tell the stories.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks, man.
Thanks so much to everyone for listening today. Be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to the Raisin Brand podcast on, so you can get notified when new episodes go live. Be sure to check out the show Raisin Brand After Hours, where we take a closer look into the entertainment industry. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, or you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, let us know by emailing podcast@thepixellab.co. Again, that's podcast@thepixellab.co. Thank you again, and have a great week.